Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and I'm delighted to have you with me today. This is the program where we talk about issues that have bearing on your health. We talk about nutrition, we talk about exercise, we talk about a lot of things, particularly that apply to people who are trying to get a diagnosis or who are dealing with some complex medical condition. Today we're going to talk about blogging, the pros and cons of blogging, the value of blogging, the aspects of blogging that are like a journal, and the aspects of blogging that are like writing your life story. We're going to talk with Beverly, who began a blog for her own reasons, and she's going to tell you about her reasons, and her blog has blossomed into more than she ever anticipated in the beginning. If you're thinking about starting a blog, we'll talk about a number of considerations, things you ought to think about, and platforms that you might use to put your blog on the internet. And you'll be part of the conversation as we talk about our son's health and what we need to do in order to keep them healthy. So please stay with us now, and we'll be right back after this message to talk with Beverly. The Powerful Patient is brought to you as a public service by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. We help you learn how to manage your health, form a partnership with your healthcare providers, and manage your healthcare team. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. We welcome your questions either by email or by telephone, and you can record your question for broadcast at 1-800-767-4845, extension 6. And you'll find those details again at powerfulpatient.org. I'd like to introduce Beverly now. Let me give you a little bit of background. Her son has a complex medical condition. He's the first person in the family ever to be diagnosed with this condition. You'll hear a little about this diagnosis as we go forward, and I'll stop and give you a little explanation. But I want you to participate in the journey that she and her family went through to discover the proper diagnosis for Stephen's condition and to get him some very real help. I first met Beverly when she sent me a pointer to her blog, and it's called Stephen's Journey. It's an account in her own voice of her journey with Stephen to find a diagnosis and to get the right treatment for his condition. Now, what is a blog? This is one of those made-up new internet words. What is a blog? It's short for web log. And a blog, then, is a kind of log, a journal, if you will, a day-to-day record-keeping in your own words, whatever you'd like to say. It doesn't have to have a theme. It can be just top of mind, whatever, like writing a diary. But it's public, and that's the main thing you need to know. It is out there for all and sundry to see. Now, there are certain utilities that allow you to put some restrictions around a blog. It doesn't have to be totally public, but in most cases, it is public. Anyone can start a blog really for any reason at all or no reason at all, and it's estimated that there are currently about, get this, 100 million bloggers on the internet. Furthermore, there are something like 200 million former bloggers who have abandoned their blogs, and so there's a lot of no longer necessary material floating around on the net. Gartner Group referred to it as dotsum and netsum, a takeoff on flotsam and jetsam, the discards from boats that are floating around in the ocean. So there's a lot of discarded material on the internet, but there's also a lot of current material, and in this election year we're seeing a lot of politicians starting blogs or some of their staffers doing blogs on their behalf. Journalists maybe write blogs. There are people who write blogs in order to make money, that put out their pundit wares for people to sign up for and pay money to subscribe to. But what we're going to talk about today is the usefulness of a blog as therapy or as a way of communicating with the people who support you in your medical journey. One of the key issues to keep in mind, of course, is privacy, and you'll hear us touch on privacy from a number of angles as we go along. So think about your own case and whether a blog would be the right medium for you.
Shall we call you Beverly, or would you rather use an alias?
No, okay. That's fine. I figure his records are all over the place now, and there's no privacy anymore.
I know. Oh, so, Beverly, tell me what inspired you to start the blog.
When Stephen was first diagnosed, he actually wasn't diagnosed with VHL immediately. It was pretty quick after we knew there were some problems, but it wasn't immediate. Mm-hmm. And we were going through a doctor visit a week, a test a week, different things that we were doing.
What kind of symptoms did he have at that point?
He was dizziness. That was it.
Mm.
He was dizzy. He did not have headaches. He did have headaches, but just headaches like anyone else would have.
And he was how old?
He was 16. He had just turned 16.
Uh-huh.
And he was very dizzy. And it's actually a fairly you know, it catches my breath sometimes how it happened, because when I take the kids to the, I don't take the kids to the doctors very often. They mm-hmm. have to be very, very ill. Because usually, you know, you'll sit there for a long time and they'll say, it's a virus, give it a week.
Right.
And, you know, I have three children. I've been there and done it, and I don't like to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what he had been complaining of dizziness for a couple weeks, and I thought he was probably overtired, not drinking enough water, too busy, not sleeping enough, things like that. And I would tell him to take better care of his health. Well, there was a local boy who died at a baseball practice, at a high school baseball practice. My husband had heard about it on the news, and he came home and he said, is Stephen still dizzy? And I knew what he was worried about. And I said, yeah, but I don't think it's anything. And he said, well, if you don't take him to the doctors, I will.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think because his dad took him that one time, that they must have understood that it was something important, you know.
Mm.
They seemed to respond fairly quickly and sent him for a couple of tests. So anyway, he had a couple different of his little tests that they ran actually came back abnormal. His heart test came back abnormal. His blood sugar test came back abnormal. And, of course, the CT scan did. And so they were looking at a couple different avenues, and I had people ask me every day how he was doing. And it was very sweet and very kind, but it was also very overwhelming for me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a site out there called Caring Bridge that you can kind of just, you know, do some real quick little updates on.
Right.
And I set up a Caring Bridge site for him. So that way, when I teach kindergarten, so when I go to work, it's a happy place.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to go in and have them say, well, have my other coworkers start asking me things and have me get emotional. I didn't want to do that.
Right, right.
So I set up this Caring Bridge, and I would just jot down things people needed to know. And over time, as we started getting deeper into this diagnosis of VHL, there wasn't so much information like, you know, like on Caring Bridge, would be like the EKG was abnormal at the hospital, but now it's fine. The doctor says it's because he plays soccer, and, you know, just that was just very cut and dry. And
right.
Over time with the VHL, we had less and less doctor's appointments. We knew what we were doing and what was going on. But emotionally, it was still hard to deal with.
So it started out as a kind of way of answering all your friends' concerns,
right.
Giving them the data that they needed without you having to recite it a million times a day and get
right.
upset again.
Yes.
For the benefit of anyone who's not so familiar with von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, this is a genetic condition that increases the odds that you're going to get tumors of the retina, brain, spinal cord, kidney, pancreas, or adrenal glands. Now, usually one person doesn't get all of the above, but will probably get two or three different kinds of tumors in the course of their lifetime, and may get multiples of those tumors. So it's an ongoing condition and something that is going to recur. We just don't know exactly when or where, but we have to monitor for it so that we can be sure to stay as healthy as possible. And this is the challenge that Stephen wound up with. While it's often genetically transmitted from one generation to another, in this case, he's the first person in his family ever to have VHL. So it was a surprise, very much out of the blue. And for his mother, the journey to the diagnosis and then the shock of this diagnosis and having to absorb the information and integrate it into her life was something for which the blog became a useful tool.
And then it just turned kind of into a life of its own. And, you know, we meet every Monday morning at work, and we have a little circle time for the teachers, and we get to, it's usually just cut and dry, like, well, this week, you know, kindergarten's going on a field trip to the aquarium, and the other classes are doing this, and it's usually cut and dry, but it's also time to bring up concerns. Mm-hmm. And I've never really been able to bring up my concerns about Stephen there because I just lose, I don't know, I can't. I don't know if it's too hard for me to talk about it. I also get the feeling sometimes that people don't quite understand.
Mm-hmm.
From the point of view of it being forever and what it means for him when he's a 35-year-old dad with kids to support.
Yeah.
And he has to go in for some major surgery, and he'll be on, you know, out of work for 6 weeks. And is his wife going to be able to handle that? And I think about these things, and it's not, I don't think other people understand how these thoughts occur in the first place and how much they mean to me, how that part of this disease really hurts. And so I don't talk about it.
Some people, when they ask you, how's he doing, well, all they really want to hear is fine.
Fine, yep.
Other people think they want the details, but you can tell at a certain point their eyes begin to glaze over. So, so it sounds to me like part of this is a way for you to pour out what you need to pour out,
mm-hmm.
and then other people can take from it what they want.
Exactly. And it can give me a chance to express things that I need to express about this,
mm-hmm.
What this disease has taken from him, how it's affected our family, the way that we try to show him that every day is a good day and you have to live with hope, while at the same time, I don't have to say it to people. I can write it, and if they, mm-hmm. because it is a blog, if they choose to read it, they can.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get tired of hearing about it, they don't have to read it.
Right. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's also has become, in a way, a sort of, it's not really like a support group. I don't necessarily get the feedback from other parents going through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, it's kind of like a support group because I feel free to speak without worrying about what I'm saying.
Now, are there parameters around Caring Bridge? Can you say, I want these people to have access and not those people, or something like that?
I think on Caring Bridge there is. I don't know exactly how. I never did that. There is a way. There is definitely a way on the blog to make it more private.
Mm-hmm.
And Caring Bridge, I know that there is a way to make a sign-in system, so you know who is signing in. I don't know if there is a way to make it private and only invite people to read. I'm not sure.
I did check, by the way, and Caring Bridge does have very good privacy parameters. There are good ways of protecting the information to keep your medical information as private as you wish. Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back to talk some more with Beverly about her journey with VHL and the role that blogging has played for her.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Won't you please help us find a cure for VHL? Please donate to the Cancer Research Fund. We have a challenge grant right now, so if you donate today, your money will go twice as far toward funding a research grant to help find a cure for Stephen and for all the people with VHL. You can donate online at powerfulpatient.org. And now let's go back and talk some more with Beverly.
So tell me your own thoughts about privacy versus publicness around your own blog.
I think that I have had nothing but good experiences in terms of the privacy versus being public. I haven't had people come on and say negative things.
Right.
Like I said before, because he was the way he was diagnosed, and because we did the genetic testing through insurance, and his first symptom obviously pointed to it. I mean, the first surgery that he had to have, it obviously pointed to VHL.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, we haven't really been too overly concerned with privacy as far as Stephen.
So the insurance company is not going to stumble on anything
right.
We don't already know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't even worried about a privacy issue from that point of view. And really, like I said, it kind of took on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I also kind of think that because of the disease, it would be nice for more people to read
mm-hmm.
and learn about it rather than to make it private and have no one know about it.
Right.
So from that point of view, too, I doubt that I would make it a private thing.
Right.
If I were, there is a way on this blog, it's called Blogger, to make it private. And if I were getting some nasty responses, I probably would.
I'm not worried so much about nasty things. I was worried about, you know, maybe you're telling a few more people than you really want to tell. And,
yeah.
And at this point in your life and his, it's probably not an issue. But let's say if he were graduating college and looking for a job,
right.
You know, it's potentially something you might not want to tell a prospective employer.
Yeah, and I was trying to explain that to him one time also, because when, and now Dale's never been tested,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have any reason to suspect he should be.
Okay.
And, but I did the testing because I needed to know for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had both of the other children through genetic test, do the genetic testing because of mosaicism. And,
right.
And
so there's a strong chance that a sibling might also have the same genetic characteristic.
Right, right, without parents actually showing it through the blood test.
Right.
And so I had us, when I did the testing and the other two, I did not do it through insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I could see the point if we came out positive, but we never have a VHL tumor.
Right.
Then I don't want insurance companies turning us down for this or that, and I don't want it on our records, and there's no point
right.
in it. But
well, at this point now, with this new legislation that's going to be signed on Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act,
mm-hmm.
that should protect you anyway. But it still doesn't change people's minds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Their perception. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I haven't really thought of the disadvantages yet when he's out looking for a job. I would hope there's laws to protect him for that too, but,
right.
But like you said, even when there is a law to protect you, there can be that discrimination anyway without them actually saying that's the reason. I have to say,
I think you and your family are handling this beautifully, and it's so kind of you to share it with everybody else.
Well, thank you.
You're doing a great job modeling this.
Thank you. Thank you. It helps, you know, writing helps you sort out your thoughts too.
Right.
It really does. You know, instead of just reacting to something, it really helps you sort out your thoughts, and it helps you keep your priorities straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy it very much. Now,
so there is a journaling component to this. In part, it's your private way of processing your own thoughts.
Yes, very much. Very, very much. It helps me think about how we approach it with Stephen. Because he was 16 and he was, you know, very aware of being different than his peers.
Mm-hmm.
And very scared of what was going to happen next.
Right.
And I could have easily fed into that. But by writing through things and thinking about things and, you know, writing them down kind of commits you to. If you write down that I want my son to be brave and I want him to enjoy each and every day, and I don't know what will happen to me tomorrow.
Right.
I mean, nobody knows. And if you write down things like that, it really commits you to live that way.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Where if I didn't write it down and I said it to him, and then 30 minutes later, you know, it would be very easy to feed in to the way he was looking at things. It really would have. So
it also documents things for yourself as well as for him.
Exactly.
That you can look back and say, yep, she really did say that.
Yeah.
It didn't just go poof in the air.
Exactly. And, you know, it was really kind of, it's very beneficial on many levels. Because, I do. I go back and I look through, well, what did they say when we went into this appointment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But also, I know one time when it was December of his senior, so December, not this past December, but December of 2006,
mm-hmm.
when we first noticed a cyst growing on one of the tumors. And that was at the local doctor. He's seen here locally in the NUPA NIH, too.
NIH is the U.S. National Institutes of Health, where there is a research program that Stephen is participating in to learn more about VHL.
So before we headed up to NIH in February, through journaling, and this didn't have to be on the blog, it's just where I did it. It could have been on a sheet of scrap paper.
Mm-hmm.
I was really able to pinpoint exactly what I wanted to ask the doctors.
Right. So you were able to assemble your thoughts.
Yes. And usually, you know, when you go in, sometimes it can be so overwhelming, or sometimes everyone's busy and it's rushed, and
mm-hmm.
all sorts of things happen that you don't remember.
Right. And just to clarify for everybody else who's listening, the dizziness and the headaches mm-hmm. were, in fact, brain tumor.
Yes.
And then he has had one brain surgery or more?
He had one in the beginning when, and actually that was more of a biopsy sort of surgery,
mm-hmm.
but it was halted in the middle because of the abnormal vascular structures and
they go
along with the hemangioblastomas.
Right.
And so they just kind of closed up the incision and left it there.
Good.
And then he did have a very successful brain surgery this past, last June, June 2007.
Right.
And they removed the one that had the cyst with it. And
Good.
He feels wonderful.
Great.
Yeah.
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 He seems like such a nice guy. I've never met him, but I've seen pictures and heard about the event that you did with him to basically celebrate him and what he's achieved.
Yes. He's a very good kid, very good.
So he's a good soccer player?
He is. He's not playing right now.
He just finished his freshman year in college?
Yeah, he just finished his freshman year, and they didn't have a boys' soccer team. Oh, you know what? He did play. They had some intramural games going on.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't played organized soccer since he finished high school. But, yeah, he enjoys it very, very much. He's a great student, really amazing student. And he's a very unique young man, really, really unique. He likes to pour through the science magazines and sit there and read them, and then, you know, out of the blue, we'll be driving along the road, and I'll say something, and he explains it to me. And yeah, he's a very cool kid.
That's great.
Very unique, yes.
Yeah. So how is he handling all the stresses of having this ongoing condition?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not always sure. Sometimes he feels very pressured to finish school in 4 years and get a job with insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's his biggest concern.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, he's, you know, we did the pancake breakfast last year.
Yeah.
And I haven't started planning anything yet for this summer because it's nearing the end of my school year and we're very busy. And then we have a vacation Bible school that we're doing that I also have to do a lot of things for, and that's very busy. And we didn't really start planning last year until mid-June,
mm-hmm.
so I haven't really started planning yet. And he'll ask me, he's been home since school since late April, and he'll ask me a couple times, so what are you doing on the breakfast right now? Stephen, I'm really busy. I promise you we'll do it. So I can tell that that's the main concern for him.
So he really had a good time.
Yeah, he had a great time.
Great.
Yeah. And then last night we were outside cleaning up the yard, and he was talking about, he said, you know, besides the VHL Family Alliance, like, what are the resources are there out there for people like me? And
mm-hmm.
I said, like, what do you mean, Stephen? And he said, I don't know. Like, is there a foundation that helps people with VHL? And I said, in what way, honey? And he started naming off a few things, and I said, well, the VHL Family Alliance helps people with that, you know, and they're a great resource for this and for that. And he said, well, what about the people who are paying for genetic testing on their own?
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, there's nothing like that out there for them. And I said, and he said, well, you know, when we were looking up scholarships, I never saw anything for kids with genetic problems like this. And I said, no, I didn't either. So
right.
He started talking, and he is determined to start some sort of a foundation to offer some financial support.
Oh, well, good for him.
I said, yeah, that's what I said. I said, go for it.
Right.
Set it up and figure out how to do it. Good for you.
Yeah, we could even set it up as a special fund in the VHL Family Alliance.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. There are foundations and so forth that will help kids with medical problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nothing as specific as genetic issues or things like that, as
mm-hmm.
far as I know.
Yeah.
But I know when my husband was in college and had bills, this was in 1967, and
mm-hmm.
we had a bill from Columbia Presbyterian that was like $10,000, which
mm.
might as well have been $10 million.
Back then, yeah.
Because we didn't have it. That was
yeah.
a lot of money in 1967.
Yeah.
And there was we were at Cornell University, and we went and talked to the financial aid people, and they said, hang on a minute, and they went and looked in their records, and there was a bequest that had been left to Cornell to help students in need.
Oh, wow.
In a crisis situation, and we got a gift from that grant.
Wow.
From that little old lady had given some money just
yeah.
for kids who need it.
That's
and,
nice.
And I've always felt like I needed to pay that back,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like pass it forward.
Mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
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 So there are many ways of helping out when need occurs, but
right.
it may not have the particular label that you may think.
Yeah, it's a little bit more tricky to find it, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's a nice way, too, to see that he feels like he can take a bit of control.
Absolutely. That's
you know?
Great.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
Let's take a minute to hear from another young man who has VHL that we're also very proud of, Keith Richards, who is a poet and a hip-hop artist in New York, and he will share his message with us here.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. we can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
Well, you're doing a great job, Mama.
Thank you.
We all do the best we can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and whoever would have thought, I mean, seriously, you, and I know your circumstances are different, but seriously, we lived our life every day like nothing would ever happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a bad way, just like you don't.
Yeah, you don't
think.
It
never crosses your mind.
No, it's not something you plan for. It's not something you sort of sign up for consciously. It just kind of happens.
It just happens, yeah. And it happens out of the blue.
Right.
He was dizzy, and I thought, he's 16. He's not eating well. He's not getting enough sleep. I know if I don't drink enough water during the course of the day, I end up with a headache.
Mm-hmm.
He's not drinking enough water, you know.
Well, and a lot of teenagers with symptoms like that get written off as hypochondriacs. He's trying to get out of school, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, really, it the story of how, of that doctor visit with Dale, it really just humbles me sometimes. Because Mary, maybe 2 years before that, was having episodes of headaches so severe she would vomit.
Mm.
And I had no idea about brain tumors. I had no idea. Nothing.
Right, right.
I had no idea that I should even be worried that she's vomiting after a headache.
Right.
And I took her to the doctors that time. And like I said, I don't take them that often, but sometimes I feel like mothers taking their kids to the doctors get shafted because they looked at me and they said, oh, we'll just start keeping a headache journal. And I thought, what? You know, that doesn't solve our problem. She has headaches. She's vomiting. Something needs to be done. But thankfully, that morning Dale took them.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, we started moving in the direction that we needed to move fairly quickly.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and her problem turned out to be something else.
Migraines. Childhood migraines, yeah.
Childhood migraines.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
But your comment about mothers are not always taken with it, the level of credibility that fathers are, and
mm-hmm.
unfortunately that is true.
I know.
Yeah.
I've lived it. If they, these, you know, I mean, just your normal run-of-the-mill viruses, I'll take the kids in. I wait at least 4 days with a fever.
Mm-hmm.
I wait at least 2 weeks with a cough. And really, I'm getting to that point now where I just look at Dale and say, she's been coughing for 3 weeks, and it's not getting better. Take her to the doctor.
That's one way to handle it. No, but the other thing is that keeping those notes, keeping a log, it does help. Because then if you go into the doctor and say, I've been keeping track of this for the last month or whatever it is, and these headaches tend to occur in this pattern after this kind of a meal or you know, at this time of the month or something like that, it does give the doctor more to chew on. And
right.
It's not just my kid has headaches. And, you know, that's very hard to do anything with, frankly.
Right.
And but if you go in and say, okay, this is the pattern and this is the severity, then they might have ordered up some more tests. Who knows?
Yeah. And, I mean, we finally came. I didn't keep a conscious log with her, but I was able to see just the pattern itself, and it's always heat related. So we figured it out, and
that's good.
Yeah, I just prefer for Dale to do all the doctor stuff now.
I can see why, as long as he's willing, why not?
He's willing, get it done. He took Mary to the doctor this morning for her little broken leg. I said,
oh no.
Yeah, I don't think I can do this. I'll handle it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Well. With three children, you have your share of little crises as well as the big ones.
All right. So, you can do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Beverly. I really appreciate it. Is there anything in particular you'd like to say to people about keeping a journal or keeping a blog?
You know, I think for me, it is a wonderful thing. It really is. I'm just very private, and I don't think I speak speak nearly as well as I can write.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has, and I'm not very organized in life either. And I think it's accomplished the, you know, stepping over those three hurdles simply by writing down my thoughts. And I think that, you know, the choice to do it in a little notebook or to do it online, that's really a personal choice. But mm-hmm. I would say that if for anybody, whether it's a medical reason or just to, you know, you're feeling frustrated in life by anything,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a great way to organize yourself, to express yourself, to set your priorities down.
Mm-hmm.
It has helped in many ways. So,
do you have a particular time of day when you go to your journal or blog?
It's when the mood hits me.
Okay.
It really is. In fact, I have stopped writing, and I'm very frustrated by it. But, you know, Stephen went away to school, and he wasn't home anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he would email me with comments about things that I wrote. And he was trying to more or less, take over that blog for me. And
mm-hmm.
and he was telling me what I need to write about. And I couldn't even if I wanted to, I could not sit down and write what he wanted me to say. It's so... This particular sort of a blog is so personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably shouldn't be called Stephen's Journey. It probably should be called something about a mom, you
mm-hmm.
know, a mom's perspective.
Right.
But it's so very personal that when he would make a comment about something that I wrote, it hurt. And when he would call and tell me what to write, I couldn't, even if I wanted to, I could not do it. It's so... Yeah, it's kind of when the mood hits me,
mm-hmm.
and it's what I want to write about,
right.
And
he could create his own.
I told him to.
No.
I did, in a very nice way, I told him to, and he didn't.
If he were to reply to some of the things that you put in the blog within that structure, would that be good or bad for you?
If he were to reply to what?
Can people put comments on your blog or not?
Yes. Yes, people can put comments on the blog, and if he were to reply, I think it was nicer to get it in an email.
Uh-huh.
So I could just read it privately.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, people can comment, and I've often considered I should not have comments on the blog, though. They've always been nice and very positive, but And, you know, there's so many blogs out there, so many blogs. But this one is unique and extremely personal. And
it almost feels intrusive to have a comment.
It does sometimes when people leave a comment.
Right.
Yeah. And it goes back to that reason I started writing in the beginning was because when I would say to people what was happening or what was going on, or more when I was saying to people, when I would talk to some friends about this overwhelming feelings that I was having,
mm-hmm.
they just don't get it. They just mm-hmm. don't get it. And they would respond in ways that would frustrate me.
Mm.
And so that's sort of the whole idea with people leaving comments on the blog. Although they've always been very nice and positive, I sometimes think they don't get it.
Yeah, and they almost can't get it.
Because no, they can't.
We live with a set of medical issues that most people find totally overwhelming.
Right.
And they probably would almost tune out at a certain point because they can't cope with it.
Right.
That was my experience with it. And I'll tell you, I went through, 20 years without knowing anybody else with
mm-hmm.
BHL at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then... when I met my first other VHL family, it was
mm-hmm.
in Warnock in Maryland, and my son was having, he was at college actually, and he was having one of those episodes that you and I know all too well of he's got headaches and he's throwing up.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the flu or is it a brain tumor?
Mm-hmm.
Now to most people that's a pretty weird question.
Right, exactly.
But to you and me, that's the life we live.
Right.
So anyway, I was talking with Susan about it, and she said, you should go to the ER and don't come home without an MRI.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I went. I took him to the ER, and we got the MRI, and I came back, and the phone was ringing. Uh-huh. And I picked up the phone. It was Susan. And she said, okay, so where is it? How big is it? What did the doctor say? And I thought, I'm having a different conversation with this woman than I have ever had with anybody in my entire life.
I know. Exactly.
Because she knew exactly what I was going through, and
exactly.
That was new and different.
And I think from most perspectives of any other sort of illness that people have faced with their children,
mm-hmm.
there's a degree of predictability. And we don't have that at all. You know, there's nothing predictable. The tumor in his brainstem was every bit as big as the one in the cerebellum, and
mm-hmm.
there's swelling in the brainstem. There's the edema. I don't know if it's... Is that technically like swelling in the brain?
Yeah, okay. Basically it is.
There's a bit of edema in the brainstem too, and I'm glad we did, because
mm-hmm.
this disease is so unpredictable, and nothing has happened with that tumor. And he got through his first year of college and living in a dorm, everything that he wanted to do and everything that we wanted him to do.
Great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. But
mm-hmm.
people don't understand the predictability.
Right.
And you're right about that conversation with Susan, because I have friends asking me, well, why don't they just take it out?
Right.
Well, they can't just take it out.
Well, you don't want to have anybody go mess with your brainstem unless you really got to.
Right. And because I've been to all these appointments with them, I understand the whole theory behind it, developing a cyst,
mm-hmm.
and then they can get it out, and they don't touch the actual brainstem tissue, or if they do, it's very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be a much easier lifetime after that.
Great.
And people just, yeah. And it's no fault at all.
It's just outside their realm of experience. And so we don't fault them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's wonderful to have supportive friends, even if they don't comprehend the nuts and bolts of what you're going through.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But it also makes me step back and not talk so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are wonderful friends, they really are, and they mean well. But by the same token, you need to have other people going through the same thing
right.
to talk to.
And one of the ways to find other people who are going through the same thing you are is on the internet. In a community like the one, for example, that VHL has at inspire.com, there are more than 60 groups that have support communities now at Inspire. People with premature babies or people with a particular condition. And you can find a number of people there who know exactly what you're going through. The value of that is enormous. And the most important piece of it is simply to know that you are not alone, that there are other people going through this same experience, and that you might be able to find some comfort and some support and maybe some insights into your own situation by talking with other people who've been there, done that. So do seek out that kind of community for your own self, because I know from experience that you will find that it makes a big difference in the way you see your own problem and the way you feel about your own situation. It gives you a kind of hope that you don't have without it. There are more than 60 communities now at Inspire, and there are other communities on the internet at things like Yahoo Groups. So you can find them. Now, there are some considerations that you need to think about, and one of them is privacy. When you put something in that support community, how public will that comment be? So think about that. And my advice to you is to begin private. You can always make it more public in the future if you want to, but start out fairly private. Make sure for example, that what you write does not contain your telephone number or your address or even your last name. Use your first name only or make up a name and try to keep that situation a little bit private. Think about, is it searchable on a website? So, for example, if your child's future employer or if your child's future mother-in-law were to put in that person's name and do a search on the internet, is that comment going to pop up? And you really want to think about that now. Even though your child may only be 12 at this time, one of these days that child is going to be entering the workforce. And is this something that you want publicly to color the way people look at your child from this day forward? So give it some consideration now. Start private. You can always go more public in the future, but do seek out a support community because it makes a world of difference.
From the perspective of having people who understand what you're talking about, it's wonderful. It is.
Let's take a break for a moment here, and we'll be back to talk more with Beverly about finding support.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org, 1-800-767-4-VHL.
And please remember to go to powerfulpatient.org to pick up the handout that goes with this show and to make your donation to the VHL Family Alliance, especially now while we have a challenge grant open and your dollars will go twice as far. So thank you very much for your support. Let's go back now and talk some more with Beverly about how to find support, whether you want to try to find something local or on the internet. And depending how rare the condition is that you're dealing with, local can be very challenging. So be open to the fact that the best support you may find, the most consistent with your own experience, may well be on the internet. Could be somebody in England. It could be someone halfway around the world. But finding that person who knows exactly what you're going through touches a chord in you that can't be touched in any other way. So do find that for yourself. But there are considerations about local, whether you have someone right there with you having a conversation, such as Beverly and I are having right now, or is it going to be okay to do it asynchronously, not at the same moment, but through a kind of email correspondence. You post something and then the other person posts it back. There are advantages both ways. So, for example, if you're talking with someone in England, then there's a 5-hour, 6-hour, 9-hour time difference. And if you post it today while you're awake, and then they read it when they're awake, that kind of asynchronous conversation works quite well when there's a big disparity in the time zones. But there is also a value to having someone in the same room or on the telephone with you having an immediate conversation. So listen in as Beverly and I talk about this for a child who's looking for support.
We've got a 16-year-old who's just had brain surgery and is having a harder time with this one than the previous one, and trying to figure out, you know, whether to hook him up with
our online support group or mm-hmm. try to hook him up with another group of 16-year-olds with chronic illness at mm-hmm. at a local hospital. What would you say? I'm not knowing the kid, obviously, so
yeah.
I don't either.
I think it's hard. The Inspire group is difficult because there's that time lapse. Mm. And you don't have the face-to-face benefit that you would at a support group. By the same token, I think it's very hard to have a support group with chronically ill children because it's not VHL. And
right.
So I know that it's often been like compared to diabetes, but I don't get the feeling that our life is anything like having a child with diabetes. Because that's, you know, that is like a day to diabetes, juvenile diabetes would be like a day-to-day thing you deal
right.
with.
With diabetes, you have to think about it every day, every
exactly.
meal, and between meals, too. You know,
yes.
should I or should I not have that Coke with my friend?
Right.
All of that is up there, and that we don't have. But the intervals of serious illness are more frequent,
right.
I think, with
right.
VHL than
right.
with diabetes.
So
but there are kids, you know, going through brain surgeries for other reasons,
okay.
too,
and,
many
yeah.
of whom are not going to be as well as
right.
our kids
right.
are.
And, yeah, I know. That's something we talk about a lot, too, that you have to count your blessings. Because really,
right.
for Stephen to be able to walk away with a brain surgery,
okay.
as complete as he was before, is amazing to us.
Yes.
And you count your blessings, and I know
yeah.
there are children with other sort of brain tumors that don't get that option,
right.
you know,
right.
and can't think about what's it going to be like when they're 35 and have a family.
Because
I know.
They
I know.
Probably won't make it to 35.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I know, and we have not sought out any sort of support groups like that for Stephen, only because he tends to freak out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I
yeah.
considered it, but I thought if he's at a support group for other children who have gone through brain surgery, it might not be a good thing for him.
Right.
Because
right.
he would see children who are dying, and
right.
he would be very freaked out by that.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, talking to other people with VHL, I think, is a good thing.
Even if a lot of them are older, in a sense, that's a good thing. You know,
exactly.
wow, there are people who are older. I
exactly.
mean, maybe I'll make it till 40, 50,
yeah.
et cetera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I guess it kind of depends on this boy. It's nice to have that face-to-face.
Right.
And, you know, I know there are several families in the area with VHL because one of my very good friend's mom is a nurse in the neurosurgical ICU area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know she had told me there was had a young man, maybe early 20s, go through there. And then I know when we had our last visit, the doctor, who I guess maybe is in a fellowship year, but we've seen her several times, so it might not be a long fellowship year, was telling
right.
us about, she was asking Stephen if he thought about children yet, and would he want to have children.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying he wasn't sure yet, and she said that they had just had a man in, and they just chose to have children and just pray their way through it, I guess.
Right.
And so I know there are several families, and it would be very nice to have a face-to-face VHL sort of group.
Right.
And I would think in the larger communities, that's probably a possibility, even if it's just by families.
It's not always possible. I mean, I'm in Boston, and there's a lot of families in the Boston
uh-huh.
area, and
yeah.
yet, you know, everybody has mixed agendas or mixed feelings about getting together, and
yeah.
so it's not always easy to gather a big group of people.
There's a national meeting for VHL in Orlando that's happening this coming weekend. So we will have almost 100 people there to talk about VHL in person.
Yeah.
You're going to be in Orlando, right?
Yes, we are.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and it's just going to be me and Stephen.
Okay.
I'm not bringing the rest of the crew.
It should be a good experience. Okay.
I'm very excited, and I really left it up to him. I asked him if he wanted to go, and if he didn't want to go, it was going to be me and Dale, just so we could sit there and listen.
Right. We've tried to design a day that'll be good for young people, because we figured Orlando's a site that people would want to bring families to. So try to design a family event.
Yeah. Great. So I'm very excited.
Good. Me
come.
Too.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I'll get to meet you face-to-face.
It will be nice, yes. Yes, it will. And maybe by then we'll have some plans for this pancake breakfast this summer. And we have great, great plans.
Wonderful.
I mean, we just feel very strongly about some fundraising.
Excellent.
You know?
Thank you.
And we're always bouncing these ideas off each other.
Yeah, we've had 11 research proposals this year.
Wow.
And we picked the top three. We're probably only going to be able to fund three.
Yeah.
But it's very exciting that we're getting really good proposals.
Good. That's nice. Stephen was asking me about that, and I said, I am not sure. I would have to ask Joyce how she finds them. So people actually submit their proposals to you, and then you decide which ones to support.
Right. We have on the website, we have the rules and the deadlines and things like that. And then people fill out the proposals. We get very good proposals. And then we have a research advisory board that goes through them, some top-notch researchers, several of whom we funded in the past. And Dr. Jim Gennara from University of Pittsburgh is the head of the research advisory board, and they've just finished their review of these proposals, and he's going to present those to the board in Orlando the day after the meeting. The board's going to meet, and we'll make the final funding decisions.
Wow.
But we usually pretty well follow the recommendations of the research advisory board.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and this year we're co-funding a grant with Dana-Farber Harvard Research Center in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's very good.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You really are an inspiration for me.
Oh, thank you.
Because everything you've started. and really, you started out. Now, did you know your husband was ill when you got married?
Yes.
Okay.
He had a clinical diagnosis of VHL in 1957, and his father, who died in 1953, had a clinical diagnosis of VHL. So we knew that it was genetic, and we knew it was a 50-50 chance, but, you know, we figured we could cope. We did not know very much about VHL. Very, very little was known.
Right.
And we knew that it was in the eye. We knew his father had had a spinal cord issue. Nobody was real clear on what that was.
That was probably back before the days of good imaging, too.
Yes, there was no imaging in the 60s. In the mid to late 70s, there were early CTs. But that was all. And you're right, imaging is one of the biggest boons to managing VHL.
Yeah.
And so it's a totally different medical era now than it was in those days.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll keep our boys as healthy as we possibly can.
Yes.
And we'll do as well as we can.
Right.
So, Beverly, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Joyce. I'm glad I had an opportunity to talk to you.
Thanks, and I'll look forward to seeing you in Orlando.
And me too.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us in this conversation today. I hope you now have a little bit better idea of the stresses that it involves to live with a chronic illness like VHL. And every illness has its own set of challenges that are probably a little bit different, but it doesn't really matter what they are. The bottom line is that they are your challenges, and they're the things that you need to get through on a daily basis. The anxieties, as well as the real situations that you're grappling with. Not only today's issues, but potentially tomorrow's issues. What's likely to occur, and how are you going to be able to position yourself for success with the next challenge? That's the biggest hurdle that we all have in dealing with whatever our illness is, whatever our challenges are, is being able to position ourselves for the next hurdle and get through it in good shape, physically as well as mentally and emotionally. Next week, we're going to talk with Dr. Phyllis Hollenbeck about a very interesting question. When should you fire your doctor? We all know when to fire an employee, but when is it right or even necessary to walk away from a doctor, find somebody else? We all need to feel comfortable and confident with our medical teams. And building that team not only involves hiring the right people, it also sometimes involves firing the person that is not making the right contribution to your team. Dr. Hollenbeck is a primary care physician and also a mother, and over the course of her practice has developed really wonderful ways of supporting her patients by developing teamwork with her own colleagues, and she has some really wonderful insights to share. So please join us again next week, and meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Thank you.